Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA. I'm delighted to welcome somebody who I have known, indeed, since the beginning of his own political career, and for more than four decades of my own as a broadcaster. And so let me introduce Ambassador John Bruton, former Irish Prime Minister, and indeed our archives will show that we first had an interview in our studios over 30 years ago, back in 1981. John Bruton, Fáilte Rót Éirín Uaisle.
Right.
Lot of water under the bridge.
Yeah, well, in 1981 I was the finance minister, and that was
right.
the last major economic crisis that Ireland was facing at that time, and we're now facing another one.
Mm-hmm.
We've, as you know, came out of that at the end of the 1980s. It obviously took time and patience and difficult decisions, but we did come out of it and emerged in a way stronger. This time, we're going through a similar process. The difficulty this time, I suppose, is that the rest of the world economy isn't growing and isn't likely to grow all that fast in the future, whereas we were assisted out of the 1980s difficulty by the fact that the world economy grew rather quickly, and then we had sort of become more competitive and were able to avail of that opportunity.
Right. You know, however, that was an extraordinarily serious, threatening time for Ireland, and it was a huge undertaking to get out of it. It wasn't. The difficulties were immense.
Well, indeed. I mean, we had very substantial increases in taxation had to be imposed on people, mm-hmm. which reduced their living standards. But we were able to preserve certain essential things, like education was not cut, the educational spending was maintained, and that has laid the foundation for the current economic growth that occurred in the 1990s, and even that continues to mm-hmm. occur to this day. If we hadn't invested in education in the 1980s in very difficult times, right. we wouldn't have the well-qualified people that are attracting unprecedented amounts of foreign direct investment into Ireland. Even last year, we had the best year ever in our history for foreign investment, much of it American investment, coming mm-hmm. into Ireland. Of course, a whole range of different sectors, because we have this educated workforce, a relatively younger workforce than the rest of Europe, an English-speaking workforce, which is important
mm-hmm.
because English is the global language of business, and people who are prepared to, you know, they're flexible, they're prepared to, you know, do different things in a different way, to work without confrontation with management. There isn't the sort of confrontation between management and employees that you see in certain other cultures in Ireland. People recognise right. that we're all in things together.
Now, if we go back to, again, the year before you became Taoiseach, back in 1993, the economy in Ireland grew by 2.7, and then there were 3 years thereafter where it was almost grew by 9%, and indeed in your last year as Taoiseach, that was close to 12%. When those who refer to the Celtic Tiger and the beginning of the Celtic Tiger, upon reflection, when those say, well, what happened in that four-year period that grew to unprecedented growth in the Irish economy, apart from the fact that you were the Prime Minister, what was it that made that giant leap?
Well, Ireland basically was then very, very competitive in terms of as a place to make money, to invest your money and get a good return on it. Ireland was the place to go in the world from 1994 right up to 2000 or 2001.
Yeah.
And that was why we achieved, I think, the highest ever growth rate was achieved the last year I was Taoiseach.
Right.
You might ask why the people didn't re-elect me on the strength of that, but they didn't anyway. And that continued right up to 2001. Things started to go a bit astray from about 2002 on, and we started to lose competitiveness, started paying ourselves more than we're really earning in all sorts of sectors, spending more than in the long run we were going to raise. And but that was all okay because we were getting lots of cheap money. And we had, if you like, the Irish economy went through two phases. The first phase was solidly based economic growth based on what we were actually producing from 1994 up to about 2001. The second phase from 2002 up to 2006 was based on borrowing, but based on unprecedented levels of borrowing. Irish people accumulated debts either through their companies or as individuals or through their governments that were without parallel relative to the size of the economy in the world. And we're now having to sort of delever all of that. It's very, very difficult. But we've made a huge amount of progress. The European Union set us certain targets when we got the bond bailout. We were to make consolidations, reducing spending and increasing revenue. And we're absolutely on target after 3 or 4 years of that. We've done most of the of the balancing has already been done. But the remaining bit is obviously the hardest bit because the easier things were done in the earlier years, the harder things were left over. So the next 2 or 3 years will be difficult, and difficult decisions will have to be made. But at the end of that, we will have a primary surplus. We'll be back into a position where, as a country, we will be spending less than we're taking in revenue. And we'll be beginning then to be able to start paying down our debts.
Ambassador, during your term of office as Taoiseach, you had the presidency within the European Union. I think that's probably 96 or there. What is the significance of a country, let's take Ireland? And what does that mean to either the economy or to the country itself to hold the presidency for what's actually only a six-month period?
What it means is that the Irish civil servant or the Irish minister is in the chair and setting the agenda at literally 1,000 or 2,000 meetings that are taking place during that 6 months. Everything from small working groups on some minor issue of European policy to very big meetings of ministers dealing with very important topics of legislation. Right. But in all of the 6 months, all of those meetings will be chaired by an Irish person. So we have to have somebody who is capable of doing that job. And we do. Ireland has been remarkably successful. In the last presidency was very successful in finalising the enlargement of the European Union.
Right.
Previous presidency, the one which I was involved with, we were able to, so to speak, launch the euro. We put all the building blocks in place for the euro. And previous Irish presidencies were very, very successful. What will it mean this year in the first 6 months of 2013? Well, I think we will be the ones that will have the job of agreeing the EU budget for the next 7 years. Mm-hmm. The EU sets its budget 7 years ahead. That isn't quite the case in the United States. There's difficulty even setting the budget a month ahead. But in the EU, we try to set it 7 years ahead, and that will have to be finalised during the Irish presidency. There will be a lot of other difficult issues to be negotiated. We have Britain wanting to re-examine its relationship with the European Union. Ireland will have to face that. We will have the finalisation of the banking union, which we need to underpin the single currency. A lot of people don't realise that the United States didn't have a banking union until 1933, even though the US existed since the 18th century. The European Union, which is over 50 years old, is now going to get its banking union in order, hopefully in the next year or two, and Ireland will have a big part in that. And we will be hopefully putting in place a sort of a solid foundation for economic growth in the world as a whole by getting the euro, by creating a situation where Europe is no longer a problem, but Europe is part of the solution.
Is there, and will there be a particular advantage. I know you've categorized it as a thing. You set the agenda. Is there an advantage, say, for Ireland that has had and continues to have difficulty with the European Union, particularly in bailouts and in the general area of finance? Do we get a leg up, or is that a myth?
I think if you do the job well, you get credit for that. And people recognise that you're professional at running meetings for everybody, that will suggest that you're professional at running your own country or that you're a place that's worth investing. But it's sort of a psychological effect. It's not a direct effect. This presidency will be different from previous ones because we have a new arrangement of the European Union now, because where previously the Irish minister or Taoiseach would have chaired all of the meetings, the heads of government are now chaired by a permanent president called Armin van Rompuy. Yeah. The finance ministers are chaired by the Luxembourg Prime Minister, the Luxembourg Prime Minister, and the Foreign Minister, Foreign Affairs Minister are chaired by somebody else. So Ireland will have a lesser number of meetings to chair at the very top than it would have had in the past. But on a lot of issues.
John Bruton, let me ask you, are these independent, separate? How does the presidency then has it lost some of its effect by virtue of what appears that the changes? I was going to say splinter, but actually it's not.
Well, I think they felt that on some issues they needed to be didn't need to be changing the chair every 6 months. So they've in the that most recent treaty, the European Union changed the arrangements for the finance ministers, the foreign ministers, and the head of government. But for the rest of all the other 1,000 or more meetings, the Irish person would still chair for the 6 months. And we can do a lot of good in that period. Now, of course, we can only work with what's there on the table. All legislative proposals in the European Union are produced by the European Commission. And only their proposals can become law. It's not like the US Congress, where any member of Congress can table an item of legislation. In Europe, only the Commission. So if the Commission hasn't tabled a proposal, there's not that much that the presidency can do about it. On the other hand, among the things that the Commission has tabled, it can set the priorities. It can devote attention to resolving some problems rather than other problems. And that can be a very important thing from a national point of view. But a country, of course, in the chair as president can't be seen to be acting solely for its own interests. In fact, it would lose credit if it did this. It has to be seen to be acting for the good of all 27 countries. That's the way it gets credit.
Yeah. Whereas you've said that the Ireland will set the agenda,
prioritize the agenda would be a more accurate way of putting it.
Okay.
We don't set it in the sense that we have to deal with what's...
That is done by the Commission?
The agenda items are put forward by the Commission. They will have loads of legislative proposals that are being considered, and they will have to be considered by all sorts of different committees. Within those, then, the presidency will be able to say, well, we're going to devote a full meeting to this particular item of legislation, and we're going to defer that other one until the following meeting. In that way, you set a priority. Or you can devote more time at a meeting to one thing rather than another. And in that way, you can influence things. But you have to be seen to be doing that for the good of all, rather than just for if it was something that only benefited your own country and you were devoting loads of time to that, you'd soon lose a lot of credit.
And the credibility, has been established, actually, during each of Ireland.
And under all parties.
Yeah.
Ireland, the Irish Public Service and the Irish politicians have been just good at this job, going back to Gareth Fitzgerald and Liam Cosgrave.
Sure. Now, let me ask you about the period that you were representing the European Union as ambassador to the United States. Was that a massive challenge? Was that you had actually worked on, and I can take credit for the stabilizing, excuse the layman's language, of the euro itself. So now as ambassador coming to the United States, what was your agenda?
Well, I came to the United States in just around the same time that President Bush was re-elected for his second term. And, of course, there had been a pretty bad relationship developed between most of Europe and the then U.S. administration over Iraq. Well, mm-hmm. at least half of Europe was not in favor of right. the Iraq matter. So there was a bit of reconstruction that had to be done, and it was done. The Bush administration did reach out very much to Europe on all sorts of issues and was very attentive to things that we brought forward. What I tried to do was to meet as many members of Congress as I could, because I think many people outside the United States don't realize how important Congress is. It's not like a parliamentary democracy mm-hmm. where the government more or less sets the agenda and Parliament has to agree. Here, Congress sets the agenda, and if one party right. has a majority in one of the houses, they can block what any administration wants to do. So I set out to make sure that every member of Congress that I could get in to meet knew how important Europe was right. To the United States, and by extension how important Ireland was as a sort of bridge right. into Europe for the United States, and that on issues that were of interest to them, I could talk to them about where they could cooperate. Mm. And I felt I got a lot of progress made on that in that respect during that time.
Many of us ambassador would feel that it is. We have a tendency to clap or give ourselves a clap in the back if we can get to meet and to see three or four Congress people and hopefully present a message for their consideration. For you to actually sit down with 250 Congress people, what was their reaction to what was then your message, and how on both sides of the aisle did were you perceived?
Well, I think first of all, I wouldn't even ask for a meeting until I'd done a lot of research on the member of Congress himself mm-hmm. or herself, and I'd try and find out something that they were interested in, from their CV or from the legislation that they'd put in. And I try and find some connection between that and something that we were doing in Europe or in the European Union legislation in particular. So when I would approach them, I'd say, I'd like to meet you, but I'd like to meet you to discuss X, knowing that X was of interest to them. Mm. Because members of Congress are bored stiff with ambassadors coming in paying a courtesy call. Yes. They really have nothing to discuss, but they just want
otherwise known as a photo op.
I tried to make sure that I had something substantial to discuss. And in that way, I got the meetings. Also, whenever I would be visiting a state, I would try to meet all of the congressmen from that state mm-hmm. before I visited the state. The knowledge that I was going to be possibly in their district was a good incentive for people frequently mm-hmm. to meet me to make sure I would present things in a way that would be helpful to their own electors.
Did you have, and did you carry somewhat of the burden of, as you previously mentioned, you had half of Europe and more than half of the European countries already keeping at arm's length the United States and watching a war, that was getting progressively worse. And would that have been a deterrent in terms of your meetings? Would there have been, a kind of reaction that said, by the way, while you're at it, what is the situation? What is with the Europeans? Who's the ally? Who isn't?
Yes.
And why aren't we getting more support?
Well, I think that feeling did exist among people, and you remember, all the argument about French fries being called freedom fries because there was negative feelings about France. But at that very time, of course, French troops were fighting alongside the United States in Afghanistan.
Right. Okay.
So even though they didn't agree with the Iraq matter, they were mm-hmm. on the same line in Afghanistan. So the links between military security and economic between Europe and the United States are so enormous.
Right.
We are by far, Europe is by far the biggest investor in the U.S. and by far the biggest investor in Europe is the US. So we've a lot of valuable things to discuss anyway. I mean, obviously there were sort of misconceptions among some members of Congress about Europe. Some people who would be maybe quite religious, believing that there was no religion at all in Europe, but I was able to explain that that isn't the case. We just are not as ostentatious about it, maybe, as is the case here. And I was able to, you know, explain all, I mean, I would end up explaining things that weren't just to do with the European Union as such, but about, you know, perceptions that might be wrong about individual European countries as well. And I had to work with the ambassadors of the different countries, including obviously the Irish ambassador, in my work. But there was never any difficulty. I have to say that President Bush, this would not be the image people would have of him in Europe, was exceptionally engaged with anything to do with the European Union and devoted a lot of personal time to it, and his people devoted a lot of personal time to European issues. Possibly because of what had gone before, but also I think there was that party, the Republican Party, is very interested in business, and there's a lot of business to be done, and you know the main business relationship in the world is between Europe and America, and that's what brings me here today to talk about the possibility of green finance operators in Ireland using U.S. funds to invest in green renewable energy all over the world. And this is, you know, an example of the sort of relationship that exists between Europe and the United States.
Okay, what is Green International Financial Services Center, GIFC?
Basically, it's an activity that already is involving about $16 billion worth of assets that have already been invested through Ireland in a whole range of projects from energy efficiency, wind farms, harnessing tidal energy, harnessing different types of energy. So recognizing that eventually we'll run out of fossil fuels and we're also damaging our environment by abusive use of these, and we need to find ways of being able to live a better life but without destroying the planet for our grandchildren. And there's money to be made doing this. But most firms don't want to invest directly in a project themselves because that's not their field. So they will invest through a fund, which will involve several assets, several types of activity, and the risk will be spread across a number of activities. And those sorts of funds, managing those sorts of funds, is something that we're particularly good in at. We have one of the biggest funds industries in the world. We're the leading actor in aircraft leasing finance, managing hedge funds, managing all sorts of funds. And now we want to combine that expertise in fund management with the expertise we already have in Ireland in green energy, where we're one of the leading figures in wind generation in the world. Put that together in an industry that will give more employment in Ireland and service the needs of investors here, investors in Europe, and people who might benefit from the investment in other parts of the world.
When you say that $16 billion dollars is in fact managed through Ireland, like who?
Who makes companies that like Kleinwort Benson, Mainstream, Scottish and Southern, BlackRock Renewable. These are all firms that are already active, operating funds out of Ireland, using the expertise that's available in Ireland in renewable energy, the engineers, the sort of geniuses that are in that field, and putting them together with people who are smart at finance. And you know, doing the management from Ireland, distributing the funds from Ireland, helping to choose good investment locations from Ireland in other parts of the world, but using Irish expertise. And this is, you know,
how much does it mean to the Irish economy presently?
Well, we already have about $16 billion invested through Ireland. I can't give you an exact figure for the number that would be employed in this, but you know, there's a total of about 12,000 people employed in the funds industry as a whole. I'd say, you know, probably not more than 1,000 would be in this field at the moment. But we'd like to expand that. We'd like to see what's now $16 billion worth invested in Ireland to reach 200 billion by 2017.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, that would involve far more jobs being created. Ireland is a good place to invest now because office rents are down.
Right.
Wages are not as high as they used to be. You can operate in an English-speaking environment much less expensively than you would if you went to London in Ireland. And it's also activity that can be distributed throughout Ireland. I mean, Limerick is one of the leading centres for aircraft finance. Well, we also, the west of Ireland is particularly strong with all sorts of renewable energy. So why not maybe see some of that activity in the west of Ireland rather than just in Dublin?
Yeah, and that's very important because many times when we look at or when we analyze from afar the bulk of the success in finance in Ireland, we do think Dublin. We think, you know, the financial centre, we do think...
Well, indeed, it started in Dublin in 1997, 1998.
Right.
So, yeah, and people, you know, the iconic buildings are all in Dublin,
right.
including, you know, buildings that are not yet completed, but you'd like to complete. But, in fact... there's a lot of the fund activity, say, in Kilkenny, in Carrick and Shannon, in Navan, I'm glad to say, and places like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is spread around the country, but, you know, partly because office rents are lower further down the country and people want to live nearer home, or you can, you know, people want to have a lifestyle that's more to their taste outside Dublin. So it is spread around, and there's a lot of available talent as well to be employed.
Now, let me ask you, though, this is not a government initiative. This is of which you, of course, have played a major role yourself. This is a personal and a private initiative that has grown into something absolutely major. Was this done intentionally without the government? Was this...
No. The government was very much fully behind this, and they have produced a plan for the period 2011 to 2016 for the financial services industry, international financial services industry generally in Ireland, and the government specifically says they want green finance to be one of the major elements in this.
Now, they're looking
my role is I'm employed, so to speak, by the private sector. I'm not part of the government, but I'm employed to promote the private sector initiatives, but in full cooperation with the government and in accordance with strategy approved by the government.
It's in the government's best interest because basically what has developed to date is, in a relatively short period of time, a lot of jobs, which in fact... you can reasonably expect that the number of jobs created in Ireland at a time of great need will double over the next two or three years.
Well, the hope is that we would add substantially. We have at the moment about in total in the international financial services industry about 33,000 people employed in Ireland. They contribute about $1 billion. In corporation profits tax to the Irish Exchequer, and $1 billion in PAYE and PRSI.
Right.
So that's in income tax of the various kinds. So that's a very substantial benefit to the Irish Exchequer, and that's money that we can use to pay old age pensions and to do all the various things that we have to do. And obviously, if we can grow the industry further, there will be further revenue gains.
What is there a correlation between what we're now seeing again? You happen to mention Nevin there, so I'm going to try and get equal time here. Over in Belmullet and Mayo on the west coast there, where you have new green energy, primarily in taking advantage of the wind industry and the greening there, is there an advantage and is there a rollout in terms of saying we're only getting started here, and how much of that has to do, or is that a good calling card for green finance?
Well, I was in Ballymullet during the year, and I was absolutely amazed by how the place has changed from what it was like when I was last in Ballymullet. I mean, it's now you know, highly modern, gleaming white town that you know looks 21st century, and you know, terrific facilities there. And if you get the communications facilities, and you have Knock Airport, you have other communications facilities close enough by, you know, there's no reason why certain, you know, of these activities that I'm talking about would not be in a place like Ballymullet. And the advantage is that in a place like that, you will have the engineering experts, because they're there to, you know, service the energy industry. Well, if they're there for that purpose, they can also be there to service the funds part of the activity.
Right.
They'll be using their expertise to assess projects in other parts of the world, not just in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason, as I say, why some of the activity shouldn't be in the West. But obviously, you know, communications are important. People need to be able to hop on a plane at short notice and get to New York or get to Singapore to see a client. And you know, one of the reasons why there is a bit of a concentration on the East Coast is that you know there's a higher frequency of flights available in Dublin than there is in Knock. That's not going to change, unfortunately.
No. Having said that, where is, and as Ireland is in the management of the funds, is that something that can fluctuate? Is it a sound enough bet, or can we expect that there will be a change along the way? Are there going to be hills and hollows?
I think that's a really apt question. The Irish funds industry has moved steadily upwards. For example, there were in every year from 2002 on, there's been an increase in the amount of funds under management in Ireland, with one exception, which was 2008. There was a slight decline in that year, but we're now as of March 2012, we have the highest amount of funds under management in Ireland that we have ever had. And 2011 was higher than any previous year.
Mm-hmm.
2010 was higher than any year previous to that again. So there's been steady growth right through from 2000 on. So, I mean, you can't say that there won't be fluctuation, but there's been less fluctuation in this sector than there's been in almost any sector in Ireland.
Global warming, greening, and how are they intertwined?
Well, I think we've seen the consequence of global warming in the major weather events in recent times that have affected this city here in New York, the big flood surge that is, I think, related to changes in the climate. The Greenland ice cap has contracted. That has meant that there's more water in the sea. And as ice caps melt, there's going to be more water in the sea, which would make the sea level rise. And at the same time, over the last 30 or 40 years, more and more and more houses are built on the seashore. You know, the proportion of houses on the seashore is far higher now than it was 50 years ago, which means there's far more houses vulnerable to weather events like that. So we're going to have to deal with that, both by putting in place things to avoid events like what occurred here recently happening again, but also by reducing the amount of fossil fuels that we pump up into the atmosphere. If we're producing, sending tons of stuff up into the atmosphere, which we are every time we burn something, and that stays there, which it does for hundreds and hundreds of years, things are bound to change.
We were of the opinion, though, that until recently, anyway, that we were talking about something that may indeed occur 50, 100 years from now. I think we're getting the wake-up call much earlier than we thought. And nobody said, by the way, we're not just talking about couple of generations from now, we were talking about sooner rather than later. So the naysayers are having to take another look at this and say, geez, it's here.
Yeah, and in Ireland, is that we've had a slightly different effect. We've had the wettest summer mm-hmm. ever in 2012, which is going to mean that grain production in Ireland next year is going to be less because people can't sow their wheat, their winter wheat. They can't get in on the land. It's so wet even now to sow it, so they're going to have to sow spring wheat, which will mean they will have less corn, less wheat being produced in Ireland in 2013 as a result of the rain in 2012. Yeah. You have simultaneously more drought in other parts of Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's also going to reduce food. I think food and water are going mm-hmm. to be the critical issues of the 21st century, even more so than energy, mm-hmm. Because of the impact of the way we use energy on the climate is damaging food production capacity. So we have a lot of problems in the world, and we lack a sort of world government. We don't have the European Union is sort of the beginnings of a world government for Europe, but we don't really have, other than the G20,
right,
any body that really is effective at making decisions on a global scale. But the problems are global, so we need global solutions.
Right. Now, GIFSC in New York, and Taoiseach, Ambassador, Mr. John Bruton, you're not here just to lecture or to educate us. There is a good reason for you being in New York. Is this an introduction for some of us to the current status and the future of the greening of your organization, GIFS?
Well, New York is, along with London, I suppose, the major financial center in the world. And it probably will continue to be for many, many years to come. I'm here to introduce New York financiers to the opportunity of investing in green-related investment mm-hmm. fund activity in Ireland, to point out to them that we have the people, we have the expertise, we have the tax system,
right,
we have the tax treaties, we have all these things that make Ireland a good location for people to make money on behalf of their clients, while at the same time investing in things that make our planet
right.
a more livable place for our children and grandchildren. I'm here to network as best I can,
right,
using the Irish consulate, using all the various firms that are already in Ireland to
right.
make contacts with other firms to make them aware of the opportunities that exist in Ireland.
How long has your organization actually been, when was it founded, when did it take off?
Well, the IFSC started in 1997-1998. I didn't become associated with it until about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when all of the different sectors, which included insurance, international
yeah.
banking, as well as the funds industry about which I've been talking, and the
mm-hmm.
aviation and so forth, came together and said, we need to employ a sort of an ambassador for the industry that can go abroad and talk about
yeah.
the opportunities in Ireland so that we can bring more business in. It's quite unusual, when you think of it, for firms that are already operating in Dublin to actually use some of their money to attract other firms in who might be competing with them for
right.
employees. It's part, I think, of an example of the sort of patriotism that there is in Ireland.
Yeah.
That people in our country recognise that we're in the problem. We've all got to make a contribution to resolving it for our own sake, and
right.
but also for the sake of others.
Can you explain the concept of the cluster in the financial opportunities and in the current makeup of the greening?
Well, I think basically people in a particular business like to be in a place or in a country where they can meet other people in the same business where they can make contacts, you know, improve mm-hmm. their understanding of what they're doing, find solutions, or even have somebody that they can bounce their ideas off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, if you like, Ireland is, you know, the leading centre in the world for aircraft financing, because yeah. you know, there's this clustering of people in that field, in the accounting firms, in the law firms, and in the leasing firms
right.
themselves, and the banks, and that attracts more because they can, you know, the same exists in the funds industry, where, you know, we and Luxembourg are the two main centres in mm. Europe for fund management.
But isn't everybody at the end of
and
the day?
We have a cluster
like
as well in yeah. pharmaceuticals. Where the right. You know, I think in Ireland we have, I think, nine of the top 10 pharmaceutical
right.
companies have
sure.
invested in Ireland substantially. We're the major pharmaceutical centre in Europe. So that's what you're talking about,
right.
a clustering of activity.
But
it's
isn't
not just
each person isn't each company and each person an individual broker, whereas they may share ideas and, I mean, they're not all contributing into the same pot to... they're not equal partners.
Well,
I mean,
part of the reason why I think we've done well is that once you get a critical number of firms, let's say in funds in Ireland,
hmm.
the law firms and the accounting firms in Ireland develop very special expertise in that field. And indeed, will, you know, maybe be devoting up to, you know, a third of their workforce to
mm-hmm.
servicing these. So when somebody else comes in the fund industry, they can tap into that expertise in the law firms and the accounting firms. Whereas if they were to go to the south of France
right.
Or to somewhere with better climate, they wouldn't find anybody with any expertise in that field. So in the accounting firms and the law firms in
mm-hmm.
that area. So the reason they keep coming back to Ireland is what you're talking
Precise,
about,
yeah.
the clustering effect. And we've been able to be quite resilient in the crisis, by contrast, say, with Greece or Portugal,
right.
because we have happened, by, you know, wisdom and good opportunity, to develop clusters of activity in software, information technology, pharmaceuticals, funds, international finance, and things
right.
like that, which are relatively resilient in the crisis, whereas other people were in sectors like shoes or
yeah.
olives, olive oil, or
right.
things like that, where, you know, there was a down, there was a, our motor cars,
right.
where there was a big downturn in the economic crisis. So we've been able to recover a bit better than, say, the Italians or the Portuguese or the Spanish or the Greeks, because of the clustering that we happen to have had previously in sectors that
right.
were relatively recession proof.
Would that be in part one of the benefits of the Celtic Tiger, that during the, I mean, it's very easy to look at the Celtic Tiger and say, boy, what a mess that turned out to be. But a lot of, again, coming back to Ireland, a lot of progress was made during those years. We have a tremendous infrastructure. We have a
sure.
tremendous track record on exports. We have a lot of things that we can go back again to the 90s and say, at a time when Ireland was having a fiscal crisis, a terrible fiscal crisis for the time, we invested in education. That, plus a lot of the fact that Ireland is the gateway to Europe, that a lot of those benefits are around, are still around. And
yeah,
I mean, we didn't. Nobody is investing in Ireland because it happens to be the first place that the plane, you know, can land. There is something amazing about.
I think there's the Celtic Tiger years, which went up to about 2001 or 2002,
yeah.
and then there was the Celtic Bubble years, which went from 2002 up to 2006. But even during the Celtic Bubble years, we did do some good things with our money.
Sure.
We developed our road infrastructure. We have a terrific road infrastructure, as anybody
mm-hmm.
who travels to Ireland will tell you, which we certainly didn't have even in 2002. And that's, you know, that's a big benefit that we will continue
right.
to enjoy for the next 50 or 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there are good decisions made even when other bad decisions were made.
What is your goal? What is the goal of GIFSC? Where do you see it? What kind, in terms of billions, do you see as realistic, and over what short term? And
well, we somewhere in the region of 16 billion in assets served
right
now, and we want to get to 200 billion in assets in green assets, or assets invested in green
right
activity.
Realistically,
by 2017, that's our goal. But I mean, that's a number. I mean, it's not the number you choose that makes a difference. It's the investment
right
you make in education. We have, for example, in Dublin City University now an LLC
right
in green finance. So we're educating the people to be available, to be employed by these firms when they come to Ireland.
Uh-huh.
We have, from the Celtic bubble years, we have, you know, a terrific amount of good accommodation available,
mm-hmm,
apartment accommodation for people who might come in at relatively low rents. You have a very multilingual and culturally diverse city in Dublin now, with people
mm-hmm
from all over the world there. So it's an exciting place for young people to come and live and work for part of their lives, even if they're not Irish. So these are all things that are, you know, are part of the attraction.
Finally, John Bruton, Ambassador Taoiseach, Mister, how will this organization, the Green International Financial Service Centre, can that be used to actually create jobs in Ireland for those who find themselves probably at one of the worst places in Irish history in terms of, again, the dreaded forced emigration?
Well, companies like Kleinworth, Benson, Mainstream, BlackRock, Renewable, and so
yeah
on, are already employing very substantial numbers of people in Dublin. If we can attract, as a result of this visit, let's say four or five more big firms to come and establish activity in Ireland, that will not just provide employment for Irish people coming out of the Irish universities, it may also provide an opportunity for Irish people working here in New York who
right
would like to go home to become employed there, or people who have no connection with Ireland
mm-hmm
who would like to work in Ireland. And that, I think, we've got to recognise that we're an international country. We're the most open economy in Europe. Ireland, I think, has a very good record as well as far as immigration is concerned. People coming into Ireland are from other countries, whatever
mm-hmm
the colour of their skin, they are treated very well, and there is a positive
mm-hmm
attitude. Irish people do remember, that in the past and again in the present, we've had to emigrate for work. So people who come into Ireland are treated well. And I think the historical experience of Ireland in the 19th
right
century is making us a more welcoming country in the 21st century to immigrants from other countries. We have a terrific Polish population in Ireland, Lithuanian, Latvian population in Ireland,
mm-hmm,
who are very much Irish as well as Polish at the moment. And they're there and continuing to be there. And that's made Ireland more diverse and more interesting than it was, in 1997, when we didn't have all those people from outside.
You have a website. How would people get more information?
Well, first of all, try and find this website. I don't think I'm going to succeed. My notes are don't.
Okay,
here it is.
We can do that.
Green IFSC, what? GISC.org. GISC.org.
Okay. All right. I thank you for joining us again, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more of you here.
I have a website myself as well, www.johnbruton.com, where anybody who wants to listen to my thoughts on any subject at all, that's where they can contact me.
That's easier.
Personal.
How about that? God, we've come a long way over the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. You can listen to me pontificating or read me pontificating forever on this website.
Okay, John, friend John Bruton.
Always a pleasure to meet you.
Okay, thanks a million.
I can say we've known one another a very, very long time, and I hope we'll continue to.
Okay, John Bruton. Tempe.com. Yeah. Can't be easier than that.
Can't be easier than that. No dot in the middle or anything like that. Just one word.
Okay.
And GIFSE.com.
Right. Okay. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.